going on, FA Nation? Welcome back. This is the Fantasy Alarm NASCAR DFS podcast. I am Dan Malin, and I am joined by our resident three-time FSWA NASCAR Writer of the Year, Matt Sells. Matt, we're coming off a pretty fun Bristol race, and we're heading to our first road course of the season. But what did you think of Bristol on the intermediate package, no dirt?
That was the best Bristol race we've had in a very long time. Like, very long time. You could pass. There were comers and goers. So much for our two laps led dominator thing, because that went out the window.
He was 48% owned in the Chrome Horde. It was wild. Yeah. If you faded Blaney last week or were even just underweight, you probably had a great week.
Yeah. Tires were a problem, like Darlington level problem, to the point where NASCAR literally had Goodyear give everybody another set of tires mid race. The Goodyear was then, putting the wheels in the middle of the tire mid-race. It was nuts. And then I don't remember if it was Pocris or the broadcast or Jeff Gluck, one of them pointed out we had more lead changes at Bristol than we did at Daytona and Atlanta this year, which is just bonkers. Fantastic. I don't know why nobody showed up for the race, though. That was a little disappointing. See.
Yeah, and that's such a disappointment too, because Bristol is such a fun track, and they put on a phenomenal race as it was. And I don't know, like, through what are we, five races into the season right now,
and we have three that are contenders for race of the year.
What, Atlanta, Bristol, and what, Vegas?
Vegas was good. I would say Daytona.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, Daytona was solid. It's Daytona 500, sure. Yeah, but hardly anything's going to – I don't know if anything's going to top Atlanta 1.
Yeah, the only snoozer was Phoenix.
Yeah, Phoenix wasn't great given the package. But overall, yeah, Bristol was an awesome race, but we do turn our attention to Circuit of the Americas for COTA, first road race of the year. Very fun and interesting entry list. I don't know, anything stand up – like, I know last week we kind of alluded to this on the podcast, how last week we were focusing on laps led. This week, there's only 68 laps. That's going to give us, not many dominator points to consider. I mean, you pretty much throw laps led out the window over on FanDuel. But yeah, we got some road ringers in this field. Should be shaping up to be a pretty fun weekend.
It should. COTA is just a great track. I love that NASCAR has added it to the schedule. It's an F1 specific built track, but I love seeing the big cup cars have to muscle around all of those tricky turns. There's like, what, 20 of them? There's a lot.
There are so many unique features about this track too.
Turn one is insane. The front stretch is nuts, because you go up, I don't know, 150 feet or something before turn one, which is a more than 90 degree turn. So that's always chaos corner. And then down through the S's, there's another hairpin. You get the longest straightaway, one of the longest straightaways on the schedule down the back stretch, that leads to one of the most hardcore braking zones on the planet.
Yeah.
Before you go through the stadium section, and then you're back home. So it's interesting. We do have a couple of changes this year for road courses. So last year they got rid of stage breaks, because I guess they thought it was too short to have stage breaks, because the way
one race was like 90 minutes.
Yeah. When they did the stages at like Sonoma, they made the first stage short enough that you didn't actually have to stop. So it's kind of pointless.
Mm-hmm.
And then last year they got rid of stage breaks. And there were no cautions on road courses. They were like pure green flag runs with basically one pit stop a race, essentially. So the field got so spread out, there was no passing, and the pit stop cycle didn't really amount to much. So they're bringing the stage breaks back this year for road courses, starting here with COTA. The other interesting part is that there is a choose rule in place. So they will choose before they get to the front stretch. I think it's like in the back half of the stadium section, like before you made the final turn that either goes to pit road or the front stretch. That's where the choose rule is. So that's kind of neat. I wonder how long the line is going to be on the outside going into turn run compared to the turn on the inside.
I'm wondering more so how many cars are just going to go off track in turn one.
A lot. That the first corner in this race is usually where you see somebody get spun out very early.
It's messy.
Yeah. I think we've seen top five cars get moved to 30th in the first lap because they spin out in turn one and then they get righted and then they're, you know, a half a mile behind the pack. So it is chaos corner for a reason. So just be wary of that. There's no predicting who's getting spun out. So I'm not going to, you know, base plays based off of, oh, this position usually gets spun out. Nah, it's impossible to tell. But yeah, we do have some road course ringers this week. We get SVG back, right?
We do. And we were commenting on his price tag on DraftKings because he's full time in the Xfinity series this year. Not off to a great start, but I mean, I don't know. Sometimes I wonder if he just gets bored, like just going in a circle as opposed to like mixing in some right and left hand.
Well, he did the first couple of races. They had some car problems that kept him out of practice for a bit, right?
Yep.
Like, he lost practice time. So we'll see what happens when he gets back to the road courses. But it might be true. He might get bored going in circles. I don't know.
But yeah, no, it's pretty loaded field. SVG's in it. AJ Allmendinger is in it. Kobayashi's back. Much better car. I don't know. Yeah, let's just assume it's a better car for him this time around than what he ran last year at Indy. I do wish he was a little bit cheaper, though. $7,000 on DraftKings is kind of pricey.
I would still take a shot. We'll get to him later.
Sure. All right, so overall, let's just quickly touch on the strategy. Road courses for DFS, it pretty much all boils down to finding the drivers that can get you position differential and just nailing five guys on FanDuel, six guys on DraftKings that just finish very well. You're going to need the winner. You're probably going to want, you know, everyone else, like all your other drivers finishing top 10, probably finishing top 8. and you're not going to want to consider dominator points. I think last week for Bristol, there were 125 laps in stage one. For dominators, that equates to 30-ish fantasy points on DraftKings. If a driver was to lead the entire stage at Bristol, that's 30 fantasy points. For Coda, we only have 15 laps in stage one.
We also have 68 in the entire race. So literally stage one last week is twice as long as the entire race this week.
Yeah. And so if you have a driver that leads every single lap in stage one for Coda, that's not even 4 fantasy points on DraftKings. Now there's more to be had if he collects the fastest laps as well. But all in all, at the end of the day, the positions, they're going to shake up, especially with stage breaks being brought back. Now there will be drivers that race for the points at the end of each stage. And there are going to be guys that are going to pit early so they can have track position to start the second and third stages. So, you know, if you're going to play somebody in the top 5, top 10, if that's where they're starting, you're mostly playing them because one, ownership will be a little bit softer. But you're also thinking that they have a good shot to either finish there or win it. So do not build. You do not need multiple dominators. You do not need to build that with that in mind this week. You are really just trying to finalize a lineup that can just get guys that score well via position differential and just having a good finishing day.
Agreed. 2 years ago, so we're going to skip the race from last year at Coda because they didn't have stage break. Daniel Suarez started second here 2 years ago, led all 15 laps in the first stage, then due to pit strategy, got shuffled back and never got back to the front.
Yeah.
He finished 24th. Chastain started 16th, led 31 laps, and won the race 2 years ago. So your laps led leader had 31 laps. It's going to make a little bit of a difference. But not, it's not like we're hunting these things. I'm not even going to look at 2021 because there was a rainstorm in.
My God, the weather was terrible at race. Remember, Cole Custer almost died?
Yeah, correct. Ran him over down the backstretch. They are okay. That's why we're laughing about it. But no, it was.
What's wild about that is Cole, I think, was on the radio and he's like, should I get out of the car? And they're like, no!
Yeah. He's like, it's like I'm a sitting duck. Well, you're worse if you're standing on the track. Put metal between you and another car. Last year, though, was interesting. Without the stage breaks, there are more guys that started outside the top 15 that finished in the top 10 than the one with stage breaks.
Interesting.
So, because we had Gilliland last year started 36th, finished 10th. We had Buescher start 32nd, finished 8th. Stenhouse started 18th, finished 7th. Gibbs started 17th and finished 9th last year. So there was that. But then in 2022, you had Truex started 17th and finished 7th. Jones started 30th and finished 9th. And Austin Dillon, because there was two of them last year, finished 10th after starting 21st. So there was only three guys that started outside the top 16 that finished inside the top 10. So stage breaks. Now, I will say there was a chunk between 11 and 20.
Mm-hmm.
That started like 6 guys who finished between 11 and 20 started 24th or worse. So like the mid pack shifted quite a bit, but the top 15 starters didn't shift all that much.
All right. You just want to take a look at the driver pool. Interesting prices. To no surprise. We see, I mean, I guess the Road Ringers priced up. Tyler Reddick, who has emerged as arguably the best road course racer in the next gen era, kind of dethroning Chase Elliott and Martin Truex Jr. But, you know, Reddick won this race a year ago without stage breaks, but he also, I believe he won Road America a couple of years ago. I think he has a win at Watkins Glen on his resume as well. But overall, he's done phenomenal on the road courses in this car, rightfully so. He's priced up at $10,500. You know, he's him, Chase, Larson, Bell, but like there's so many, they're just good drivers all around priced up. And so like if Reddick goes out and wins the pole, I feel like you can still probably play him in a tournament simply because like he just has so much win equity. I mean, his odds on the sports books isn't even like fun.
No, it's plus 450 is the odds right now, which is not, there's not really value there.
Yeah. And, you know, at the end of the day, we always say this for road course podcasts as well. It's like, don't look at certain drivers in the sense that you need them to hit a certain like X value. Like you're not looking for 5X or 6X value. really, you're just trying to maximize the points. Like have the lineup that you build tell a story. Like if you play Reddick at 10,500 and he's on the pole, sure, you know, those dominator points, they're bonuses, but you really do want him to probably at least finish top three, preferably win the race. And then you're just nailing every other guy that has, you know, position differential. And those other drivers will hit the value more than Reddick will. But really, if you can find six guys for your DraftKings lineup that can go out and each put up 45 points at the minimum, you're going to do very well.
Yeah, that's what – so I was actually just about to ask you that. So because we talk about value here on this podcast all the time, right? 5X, 6X plus value for cash and GPPs. We're not talking value this week because you're not getting value out of anybody. There's not enough laps in the rate. I mean, if you get PD, you can. But the top guys, the ones that you usually play, okay, I need 5X or 6X to make him viable. We're not talking that this week because there's not enough laps led to boost you into that. So we're looking for guys that can put up 45-plus points, right? So winning the race gets you that. Regardless of laps led, regardless of where you start, the finish position gets you that. So if he's on the pole and he wins, he's worth it. But other than that, it's a little tough to see where exactly the points and the upside are coming from Tyler Reddick. As good as he's been, it's still a little steeper than I'm fully comfortable with.
Yeah. Chase Elliott was a very interesting play. I actually ended up overweight on Chase last week, and early on in the race, I actually loved the play. This is Bristol that we're talking about. Thought he was able to move up pretty well. I actually was kind of surprised that he could only manage 5 laps led. I loved the speed that he had in the car. overall wasn't a great DFS play. But he has won here. He did win the race that was in a monsoon.
He did. It was shortened.
I think that he's just trending well enough where I can go back to the well and feel fine about this $10,300 price tag. He definitely needs to get back in the win column, especially since, you know, Larson and Byron have essentially emerged as the two elite drivers at Hendrick. But I feel like this is a good bounce back spot for Elliott.
I would agree. And if we look at the last, I would set the 19 road races on my data set. So basically every road race since 2021. Chase Elliott's taking out SVG, who's only run two races.
Yeah.
A great average finish, right? But it's two races. Chase Elliott is by far and away the best average finish guy in the field at 8.2. He's got 11 top fives in those 18 races because he missed one thanks to the broken leg.
Yeah.
I don't see any reason why he shouldn't be a factor in lineups and the race, to be perfectly honest. If he's going to end the winless streak, this is one of the ones we assume he would do it at. I have no real problem paying 10-3 for Chase at this point. I mean, I know it's a jump. It's the most he's been all season, but it's a road course, and he's looked better arguably with each race this year. So I have no problems playing Chase at 10-3, even to get off of, I don't know if you want to call it chalk, but like the hype around Reddick.
I think we can safely call it chalk.
Yeah.
Because he's at a point, I think he's just shown you enough on road courses that it doesn't matter where he starts. I mean, if he starts farther back, like if he has an issue on qualifying, he's going to, like, his ownership will be juice. But even if he starts on the pole, people are still going to play him for the win equity.
Yeah, I would tend to agree. Because if we look again over the last 19 or so races, you've got Elliott winning two of the cup races. Reddick has three wins, and the guy who's just below Chase in the pricing has four wins. That's Kyle Larson. But, you know, Larson hasn't done anything in, like, he was kind of a miss on road courses last year completely. So I guess that's a good question. Does the stage breaks re-energize Larson? Because he seemed to figure out how to do really well with the stage breaks and the strategy, and then they used the same strategy without stage breaks, and it did not work at all.
Yeah, it probably does help him.
Because he dominated at Sonoma with the stage breaks in 2022, and then they got rid of stage breaks in 2023, and he pitted the exact same way, and he could not make passes to get back to the lead, even if he had the fastest car.
Right.
So that's an interesting situation here where I think a lot of people in recency bias are going to look at Kyle Larson and go, oh, he was flat out not good at road courses last year. I mean, if you look at the last several, 35th, 14th, 8th, 4th, 8th, 26th, and 13th, that's nothing to write home about particularly. But if you look before that, he's got four wins in that grouping when he didn't crash out. So I think this favors Larson with the stage break strategy.
What's your approach, or what do you think is going to be your approach between SVG and Allmendinger? SVG is 9,500. Allmendinger is 8,800. Kind of surprised because they both won a cup race last year for Colleg Racing. And no, SVG won it for Trackhouse. Apologies.
Yes.
Dinger won it for a colleague. I don't know. I feel like
I might go Allmendinger a little bit.
Yeah.
Because I think there's a lot of, shall we say, juice around SVG. Oh, he's coming back. The darling of, you know, everybody knows he's a road ringer. Everybody knows what he did in Chicago. Everybody knows he's running Xfinity, so he's going to have more track time. Well, so is Allmendinger. So I'll save the money, and I don't think a lot of people are paying attention to Allmendinger, for whatever reason, he was every bit as good on road races as SVG last year in the Cup Series. So I'll take the discount.
I love looking at ownership. I mean, it's always funny when you go to AJ Allmendinger's driver averages profile for the Xfinity Series, because it's just every road course that's at the top. He won this race last year at Coda in the Xfinity Series, started on the pole, led 28 laps. 2022, he won that race, starting P4 with 27 laps led. 2021, he finished second, but still, like, he's – and the fun thing is that, like, he's won the first stage, hands down, and then he kind of drops back in stage two, and I think he's okay pitting for track position, but then he just goes on, moves back up in stage three. Like, he's just outstanding on these courses.
My lovely wife sent me a text that I had to read. To give you an idea, right? Christopher Bell is in the top four prices, top four or five. He's 10 grand on DK, mm-hmm. right? Allmendinger is 8,800 on DK. If you look over the every road race between 2021 and the end of last year, Allmendinger's run 17 of them in the Cup Series, and Seabell's run 19. They have the exact same average finish, 14.2. They have the same amount of wins. Allmendinger has six top fives compared to Bell's five. They have the same number of top tens. Seabell's got two more top 15s, but they have basically the same record, right? Mm-hmm. Allmendinger's got nearly twice as many fastest laps per race, got more laps led by a touch. Basically the same average running position. I mean, they are basically the same driver. So if you're super psyched about Christopher Bell, take a discount and get Allmendinger. Not saying don't play Seabell. He's perfectly fine to play. But, like, I would take Allmendinger, save the money, and get a little less ownership, I think.
I'm almost surprised, because it feels like last year when Allmendinger was full-time in the Cup Series, it seemed like for road courses especially, he was just routinely priced – I want to say between like 9,200 and 9,700. Like, they did juice his price tag for these courses. So 8,800, just, it does feel like a nice discount, especially when you know, like, he gets extra track time for practice and qualifying in the actual Xfinity Series race. And then he gets, you know, the time in the Cup car as well. So, like, there's absolutely nothing wrong with, you know, being able to turn some extra laps. But another
fun, since we're talking about mid tier guys, you want to hear a fun, completely mid tier lineup you can build on DK?
Go for it.
Leaves $2,000 left on the table, and there is nobody in this lineup that is more than 8,800, and nobody less than $7,000.
Can I guess it? No, I don't want to waste time.
Buescher, McDowell, Bowman, Gibbs, Allmendinger, and Kobayashi.
See, two of those guys that you mentioned, I do want to discuss, because it does feel like McDowell is too cheap for a road course.
He does, so, yes.
Considering he won one last year. And
he finishes well in basically all of them.
Kobayashi is an interesting play, simply because, like, he does have experience at he's probably, outside of Allmendinger, probably run more races here than most of the field.
Yeah, he's run, what, six, I think he's on record saying? He's run six races.
I think so. I think the last one was like around 2016, but even then, like, he says he's been in the simulator. He feels more comfortable this time around than what he was in for the Indy race last year. Right. Also, $7,000.
He was plagued by, he didn't actually get like track time at Indy because his car broke and it was like the 20-minute practice sessions. Because I don't remember what it was, but some part on the RCR car did not work or. Mm-hmm. Broke, and so he basically got no practice time at Indy, which is a completely different track than Coda. Like, Indy is as flat as possible, and Coda has as much elevation change as possible.
Yeah.
But he's got skills, and he's run here a bunch. So Kobayashi is very interested in me being priced at $7,000.
The interesting thing about this lineup too, and it brings up a good talking point, because it leaves $2,000 on the table. And I was actually looking at, there are a variety of NASCAR DFS accounts that are kind of always tweeting out like optimal lineups from the last three COTA races between the truck, Xfinity, and Cup Series. Some of them leave between $1,000 and $2,000 on the table. And I'm not saying you should take a Daytona or Talladega approach this weekend and leave. Yeah, but at the same time, you know that 95% of the field is going to try and spend every dollar that they can. I think a good strategy to build unique lineups is just to maybe leave $1,000 to $2,000 on the table, like this one does, because these are all good drivers that I trust on a road course. Even Gibbs, who's trending up the right way. Bowman has finished
P8 or better.
Eighth or better, and he's finished top three the last 2 years. So, strange.
And he could have won last year, except there was that, the fight on the last few laps, and he got shoved out of the way on one of the corners.
And I think that happened you are correct. I can't remember if that was last year or the year before. But yeah, like interesting point. Like you don't need to spend every dollar if you're just trying to, you know, get six guys into your lineup that you think can move up and score well.
Yeah. Now, the only issue that I have with this lineup is that it probably limits PD. This lineup is probably geared towards.
That's a good point.
Finishing well, right? Yeah. Which is key. The largest chunk of points this week are going to be from finish points. Problem is that, I mean, Buescher did qualify 32nd last year and moved up. But generally speaking, McDowell starts better than 13th most of the time at road races.
Even this year.
What?
Even this year, McDowell hasn't started worse than P12 in any race.
Right. Gibbs basically starts and finishes about the same. So you get nice finish position, but there's not a lot of PD. Kobayashi's probably the one wild card here because he qualified at 28th last year at Indy. Allmendinger tends to move up pretty decently here. He tends to not qualify great, like probably in the mid-teens, and then can move up. But like if we're looking for massive PD guys, this lineup doesn't have it. This one is geared towards you might get guys who start well and lead some laps and then finish well. So it's an overall solid lineup. But there's not – it's a – this kind of lineup is very good for cash. There is a high floor and a low ceiling. It's not – I would not play a lineup like this in GPPs because there's not a high upside or a low floor, which is the kind of lineup you build for GPPs. But yeah, Ty Gibbs, I feel like it's under the radar at road courses. Like, he's putting up some pretty good numbers. If you look at
anytime we talk Ty Gibbs at a road course, I just automatically think to his debut in the Xfinity Series at Daytona's road.
At Daytona Road.
Yeah, and he was like 4,500 on DraftKings.
Yeah, he was. Let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Five of the last six Cup Road courses, he has finished 12th or better, and that includes four top 10s in that span. So, but again, speaking to what I just spoke about, he qualified it on average 13th in the 9 Cup races he's run. He's finished 13.6 on average in the 9 Cup races. So he's going to qualify it and finish it about where he starts, right? So there are some other, you know, Austin Cindric is in this range that we could talk about.
I actually, Cindric and Gibbs both had outstanding success on road courses in the Xfinity Series. Gibbs won Daytona. As we mentioned, he won at Indy. He won Watkins Glen. He won Road America. I'm pulling up Cindric's road course numbers because his are just as good, if not better. He won at Indy, I think he finished second. I have to pull up the details.
He's run very well at Road America. I'm not sure he actually ever won it, but he ran really, really well there.
He won it in 2020, and he was second in 2019. At the Roval, he finished second in 2021, and then in 2018 and 2019, he was third. But then again, like last year, Cindric was a driver who on road courses was priced up a little bit. I mean, 7,200 isn't really the case this year, but I feel like a year ago he was in the mid 8K range on DraftKings for road courses.
Yeah, and I will give him this, and I don't know. So his average finish over 15 cup road courses is 14.7. Okay.
Yeah.
So that's solid. But if we look at the last five qualifying efforts, which is basically all of last year, qualified at 34th, 31st, 20th, 17th, and 29th. In those last five races, he finished 25th, 6th, 15th, 16th, and 25th. Granted, no stage breaks, but he still put it in the top 10 most of the time with stage breaks.
Yeah.
So he is a guy that as the race goes, he will figure out how to find speed on the track thanks to his background of open wheel racing and a lot of high quality road races he's put in. So he's another guy who, yes, I know the team is sucking right now. Penske has a lot of speed to start and then doesn't always finish the race as well. But if you're like, well, everybody's talking up Kobayashi, get off Kobayashi and go to Cindric. And then all of a sudden you've got some PD, you know, in your deal with a proven road racer. So there is that. Now the budget guys. This is where it gets fun on road races.
Yeah, they're not great.
They're not great. Gilliland is probably my favorite. Again.
Yeah, when you consider, like, you know, he's McDowell's teammate. We like McDowell. He has the Penske affiliation between Front Row and Penske. And he won at COTA in the truck series.
Yeah, and last year, granted, no stage breaks. Last year he moved from 36th to 10th. Great job. In the one with stage breaks, he moved from 29th to 16th.
Not so he's still moving up.
Again, not looking at 2021 because that race was a disaster. Literally, they got the most rain on record in Austin in a weekend. and they shortened it and all sorts of stuff. So he's intriguing. Justin Haley is a sneaky little road racer, though.
Wasn't he in contention last year with colleague at Chicago?
He was leading Chicago and then got passed by SVG and then tried everything in the book to pass him and couldn't. But at COTA, he started 9th and finished 15th. That's not going to kill you in this range.
Right.
You know, Harrison Burton had a good run here 2 years ago. I don't know. I mean, obviously, we're grasping at straws. They're very small sample sizes. Things have to go right for these guys.
Yeah, because I know before the podcast, we were even talking about Zane Smith, who won here twice in the truck series. But he needs a lot of things to go his way. He probably does need a little bit of chaos.
Yeah.
Plus, the car hasn't been great, really.
Correct.
But
I do feel like he ran better last week at Bristol than he got credit for.
Probably true, but over his last four races on DraftKings, he has a total of one fantasy point.
That's not great.
Yeah, negative 14 points last week, 17 the week before, negative 2 at Vegas, and then 0 for Atlanta.
Not
tough break, kid.
Yeah. LaJoy is interesting.
When's he not interesting?
I mean, that's fair. But last year he did run pretty well here, to be perfectly honest. There was some chaos, but he went from 27th to 11th. Again, no stage breaks.
Yeah.
So there was that. Not great in 2022. But again, this team has made some serious strides between 2022, 2023, and now this year. So, I don't know. Stenhouse could be sneaky.
Oh boy. I mean, the appealing thing with Stenhouse is that he's 5,500 on DraftKings, which is actually great considering. Yeah.
I will say he has in the last 19 cup road races.
He somehow finished 7th here last year.
He has 7 top 15s in the last 19 road courses. Now, they haven't been in a little while. But if he keeps it clean, you never know.
Yeah.
I mean, it's
and if there's a late restart on this, there's going to be chaos as the field goes into turn one for a two-lap shootout.
Correct. But, like, again, he is not a cash play.
Mm-hmm.
Like, none of these guys we're really talking about, except for maybe Gilliland, depending on where he starts, are cash plays. I think you could perfectly live in the mid-tier for cash builds. Stenhouse comes in handy at $5,500. If you say, okay, I want Reddick because I'm going to eat the chalk, and I want Chase because I'm really going to eat the chalk, and then instead of SVG, I'm going to go with Allmendinger because I like him, and then we're going to go with, I don't know, let's say Ty Gibbs because not a lot of people pay attention to him on road races, and now you get Gilliland. That is a GPP build. And if you want two or three high-priced dudes, you're going to have to get two or three budget dudes. You know, probably two budget guys to even out the average you can spend.
Yeah.
So these guys are not cash plays. They are GPPs. They're boom or bust. If he keeps it clean, could be top 15. If he doesn't, sorry. That's a guy that's not going to help you score. But yeah, that's kind of the way I'm looking at some of these guys. Don't like Bubba this week. Don't play him. He can't turn right.
Yeah, he doesn't like road courses.
No,
he
better, but he still doesn't like them.
Yeah. Any final thoughts before we send the people on their merry way? Fun weekend lined up, though. All three series, we get nice practices and qualifying sessions.
Yeah, we are recording this on Friday early afternoon. So it's about 2 hours before truck practice and qualifying. So yeah, and then we'll get Cup. So Xfinity is later on Friday. They're like Friday about dinner time for practice and qualifying. And then Cup is at like 10 a.m. Eastern Saturday morning for practice and qualifying. So it's a good, you know, three series show. It's pretty nice. Weather looks fine, so that's a bonus. And hopefully we keep this run of really nice races going on. This is a fun and challenging road course. You're not going to hear me in the write-up. I'm just going to list road courses. You can't comp any one road course to another one. You can only use really the general discipline of road racing. Because if I had to, I would say this is probably closer to Sonoma than, say, Watkins Glen. But it's just as fast as Watkins Glen. It's just more technical than Watkins Glen.
Right.
Right? But it's totally different than Indy. But it's Indy still has fast and technical parts. There's just no elevation change. So it's just a road course in general. It's pretty hard to comp one to another like we would comp, say, Vegas to Kansas to, you know, Michigan or whatever. But yeah, that's kind of the general rundown for this week's racing. I'll have a betting piece out probably at this point Saturday morning. I'll try to get back on the good spot there. But yeah, I would not take Tyler Reddick. Since we've started recording, the odds have changed now, by the way. Reddick is down to +400, so now I'm even more averse to taking him to win. Chase Elliott's +800. Not betting SVG at +1200. There's no real value there. You want to get, I would, however, consider like Ty Gibbs or C. Bell at +1200. Larson at +1500 with twice the track time as almost anybody else because he's running Xfinity is interesting. Allmendinger is always in play. And if you want some really out of the way, like longer shots, Austin Cindric, if he gets things correctly at 30-1, could be intriguing. I don't know. Kobayashi would have to have a lot go right, but you can get 30-1, which is the same range as noted bad road racers Ryan Blaney and Joey Logano.
Yeah, the Blaney line makes no sense.
No, that guy is not great. Neither is Logano. Yeah, Buescher at 2,200. Bowman at 30-1 at COTA is intriguing, though.
Yeah, it's not bad since he has like a few top second and third the last 2 years here.
Yeah, and then if you want some quick top tens, Bowman is even money on BetMGM for a top 10. On Bet Rivers, if you can bet that, he's plus 135, which is intriguing. McDowell's minus 110 at BetMGM for a top 10. That dude averages top 10 finishes in his sleep on road courses. So there's some interesting. See if there's any matchups real quick that are intriguing to me. There's a Cindric is plus 100 up against Bowman at minus 130.
Against Bowman?
Yeah.
I don't know if I would take that.
The other odds are Bowman minus 120 and Cindric minus 110.
I hate betting head-to-heads for NASCAR.
Oh, you want Larson at plus 140 compared to Reddick minus 185?
I'm sorry, what was that?
Larson plus 140 versus Reddick at minus 185.
I would take a stab at Larson.
I would too, at that difference. Or you can get him plus 115 versus Reddick's plus or minus 150. That's a DK. So I'd take the plus 140 at MGM. Yeah, those are kind of the... Hamlin plus 100 against Bush minus 130.
Not bad.
So there's some, if you scout them, there's some interesting matchup lines. But that'll do it for this week. You know, I have the write ups. Dan will have write ups out this afternoon and tomorrow morning, probably.
Probably later tonight, and probably truck will be up later tonight, very late tonight, probably 10, 11 p.m. Eastern, and then Xfinity will be up in the morning.
Yeah, and oh, catch Malin on with Howard and Jim this afternoon if you're listening to this. He'll be on, 7:30 Eastern or so?
Yeah, Friday night, if this podcast is up by then, but if it is, great. But yeah, I'll be joining them around 7:30 p.m. Eastern time.
And if not, you can find the replays on the app and the website. Yeah, and then I'll have my cup stuff out Saturday. And then, as a heads up, I'm probably not going to get a chance to watch the race live, by the way, on Sunday, because it's my daughter's birthday party on Sunday during the race, because I'm a genius. So I'm probably not going to be following. I'm not going to be watching it. I may be trying to follow along through Discord comments and Twitter. But, yeah, unfortunately likely won't be able to watch the whole thing live.
All right. Well, Matt, thank you so much for your time. Good stuff as always. Best of luck to you this week and best of luck to the FA Nation.
Best of luck, FA Nation.